We've now arrived at a result for the Hamiltonian in a very nice and compact form, which allowed us, for example, to define the vacuum. But now we want to move on in interpreting this result. And in particular, we want to see how this leads to the particle interpretation of our field. So this is the particle interpretation. And, well, there are two relations that you can relatively in a straightforward way derive from the Hamiltonian in the form that we just derived. And one is that the commutator of the Hamiltonian with the creation operator, so we call a dagger a creation operator for reasons that you will see in a second, is given by omega p AP dagger, and the commutation with AP, with the annihilation operator, is given by minus omega P AP. And you can do the same for the momentum operator. So if we have this capital P here, then this will just be a P, and the same here. this is sort of relatively straightforward to do, and I put this in the exercises. And it's also straightforward to do, like in a few lines, to basically use these relations to conclude that when you act on the vacuum state with not with AP, but with AP dagger, that you create a state that is an eigenstate of H and P at the same time. And the eigenvalues are just given by the omega P. And in fact, you can repeat this argument multiple times. And the conclusion, I just write down here as a conclusion, is that I can write all energy eigenstates in a very simple form. So all energy eigenstates can be written as the A daggers acting on the vacuum state. So I can always write them in this form, AP dagger, and then I could have multiple of them. Let's call it AQ maybe. The Qs, there could be multiple various of copies of the same A dagger P, or the momentum could be different. So, and the energy the total energy of the state, so the eigenvalue of the Hamiltonian, is just the sum of the corresponding omegas. So we really learn now to interpret the omega as the energy of the state. So plus omega q, and momentum, so the total momentum, is just the sum of the momenta that appear there. So that means that we should really interpret these Fourier variables here as the physical momenta of the field. Okay, so this is the basis of our particle interpretation, because we create discrete states with a specific energy and momentum that, by the very definition of the omega, satisfies the energy momentum relation. So this is a crucial result here, that we got from quantizing our classical field theory in a consistent way. So let's just rewrite this in words. So that means that AP dagger creates an excitation above the vacuum. With energy omega p equal to p squared plus m squared. Yeah, and note that I did not have to pick by hand the positive solution here. Yeah, so it's really, this was our definition, and by in no step of the derivation did we discard any negative energy solutions. Yeah, so this is really larger than zero. Yeah, so that means this is already a first indication that we may have a chance to solve all the problems that I indicated in the first lecture with the naive approach of applying a relativistic Hamiltonian to the Schrödinger equation. And well, with energy omega p and momentum p. Yeah. So this is really what we refer to as particles. Yeah, so note that, I mean, it's a rather subtle way we introduce particles. So particles for us are now objects that have a definite energy and momentum with the correct relativistic energy momentum relation. Yeah, particles are not necessarily localized in space, which indeed we cannot expect to find in a quantum theory. We already know from standard non-relativistic quantum mechanics that we have the uncertainty relation. So we cannot hope to be able to describe particles as objects that are localized in space. Now, but we do, I mean, what we do mean by particles is excitations above the vacuum, yeah, with a definite energy and momentum. And the whole point about this is that these are discrete excitations. Yeah, so as opposed to the continuous energy spectrum that we have in classical physics. So let's maybe also stress this. So it's discrete. But not necessarily localized in space. Okay, we can also make immediate contact to another of the puzzling things in standard quantum mechanics, and that is the spin statistics correlation. Yeah, so we can actually look at the statistics of these particles, statistical distribution, from the commutation relations. So we observe that, well, one thing is that if we have AP dagger, AQ dagger acting on the ground state, yeah, so this should you first create a particle with momentum Q, and then you create a particle on the state with momentum p. Yeah, but using the commutation relations, this is given as a plus a dot q a p. Yeah, so in other words, the a daggers always commute. So there's no such thing as this minus sign that you have to postulate for fermions. And then we know that if we apply the same creation operator for the same momentum multiple times, yeah, we can do so, and we create a state that is not zero. Yeah? So we can, in other words, put an arbitrary number of particles with exactly the same quantum numbers in the same in a given state. So this is not zero for any number of n. Yeah, so what do we learn from this? Well, if you think about statistical physics, yeah, these are requirements that you basically use when you derive the well, the equipartition functions in statistical physics and thermodynamics. Yeah, and when you knowing that or assuming that every state can be occupied an arbitrary number of times, then in thermal equilibrium, you get what is known as the Bose-Einstein statistics. So we already know that these particles, so the particles described by the Klein-Gordon equation, must satisfy the Bose-Einstein statistics. So Klein-Gordon particles obey Bose-Einstein statistics. Yeah, this is our first example of how we can actually deduce the quantum statistics or the statistical distribution, the thermodynamic statistics, statistical properties of a particle based on the quantization prescription. Okay, so let's introduce some conventions that will be useful later on. And these are, as other conventions, not quite unique. So here I will follow those of the book. So in particular, we introduce a state P, yeah, as a one particle state. So describing a particle with definite momentum P. Well, we know that it must be proportional to just a P dagger acting on the vacuum. But we introduce now a conventional prefactor. So in this way, a P dagger of zero. And well, why is this a useful convention? Because then the scalar product of such states takes a very simple form, namely, well, we just use the commutation relations. So then we get a 2EP, yeah, because well, it would give zero if Q is not the same as P. So Q must be equal to P, 2 pi 3, and a delta 3 P minus Q. Yeah, so I just used explicitly the commutation relation. Yeah, so taking the conjugate of P of the ket here, converting it into a Bra vector, gives us an A instead of an A dagger. So that gives us a factor of AQ A dagger P, and then you commute it, and then you get this result. So why is that a normalization that we want? Because it's Lorentz invariant. And that is actually not obvious to see at all. And it's nicely discussed in the book, but let me just briefly rephrase it here. Yeah, so it's really based on the observation that if you have a 4D Lorentz integral, yeah, and look at this expression here, so delta P squared minus M squared, theta P naught. Yeah. So what is this kind of integral telling us? Well, it is, okay, so apart from the theta function, the Heaviside function, this is manifestly Lorentz invariant, right? So we have a 4D integration, and here we have a just a four vector contracted. Yeah. So this term tells us that our particles are obey the relativistic energy momentum relation. So in technical terms, they are on the mass shell. Yeah, so that means that not all these 4 degrees of freedom for the four vector P are actually independent. Yeah, so physically, we only have 3 momentum components, and then we know the energy. So that's enforced by this mathematical condition. But then if you think about Lorentz transformations, in general, Lorentz transformations allow time reflections. Yeah, so in Fourier space, that means that I could have a P naught component that is negative. Yeah, but this is not a physical particle. We want to restrict our physical particles, of course, to energies that are positive. And that is enforced by this one. So we basically factor out half of the Lorentz group, because we only are interested in rotations and boosts of physical particles. It would be a non-continuous, a discontinuous Lorentz transformation to bring us to negative energies. So then, I mean, we can rewrite this. Yeah, so basically, you can use the general expression for the Lorentz transformation, sorry, for the delta function, for integrating over a delta function. So this is essentially, you should write this as P naught plus EP times P naught minus EP, where the energy is given by the relativistic energy momentum relation. And then you can use the general expression when you try to integrate over a delta function that is not of the form x minus x naught, but of a functional form f of x, that has multiple zeros. So here there are two zeros, and physically we only are interested into this zero because of the theta function. So in the end, this gives you exactly, it's a very nice exercise to actually do this, this form here. So that is why I'm saying that when you have a phase space integral or a Lorentz invariant integral, it actually takes this form, meaning that in order to remain Lorentz invariant, you need, for example, amplitudes to be of this form. So you need this factor here to cancel this one, and then the 3D delta function would cancel this, such that the result is manifestly Lorentz invariant.